forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. My guest is Noelle Patino. She's the Chief Science Officer, CSO, of Bened Life Incorporated, BENED. We're going to talk about what's called medical microbes and gut-brain activity and probiotics. So welcome, Noelle. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, if you would, just tell me a bit about your background and how you came to Bened, and then we'll talk about Bened and what it does.
Sure. I have a background in chemical engineering from Stanford and engineering work at Abbott Laboratories in the pharmaceutical and medical device industry. I also have a PhD in molecular metabolism and nutrition from the University of Chicago and worked in the dietary supplements and medical food space with Metagenics for several years in probiotics, digestive health, immune health, and even cardiovascular and metabolic products. Now I'm with Bened Life, and as Chief Science Officer, I handle a lot of scientific education, and we're working on a new scientific research venture. The main problems that we're addressing are unmet needs for neurological conditions and mental health needs with microbiome-based solutions.
Yeah, what kind of conditions? What are the top one or two that you guys are going to address or are addressing?
Yes, so autism would be the neurological condition that we have the most evidence for with Parkinson's disease with promising results.
Autism and Parkinson's, or autism combined with Parkinson's? I didn't understand what you meant. I'm sorry.
Oh, separately. Yes. So autism as a neurodevelopmental disability, it's been addressed in children, and separately, Parkinson's disease in the older population, where it is found as the neurodegenerative neurological condition.
Okay, got it. Gotcha. So for autism, what have you guys created to help kids with autism? Is it a probiotic? Like, what is it?
Yes. So PS128 is the probiotic. It's a psychobiotic because it has this gut-brain activity. It has this benefit in autism. Its full name is Lactiplantibacillus plantarum PS128, and it has been studied in 4 clinical trials for autism.
What does it appear to do? Like, what metabolites does this microbe make, and why does it help autism?
So L-plantarum PS128 is very interesting. It was originally derived from Taiwanese fermented food, and now it's manufactured in controlled conditions. And it has some very unique properties. In preclinical studies, taking PS128 resulted in higher levels of serotonin and dopamine in stressed models and Parkinson's disease models. So we believe that this activity of altering serotonin and dopamine for the better in the brain through this gut-brain axis signaling is happening in humans. In the clinical studies in autism, PS128 has shown to be associated with benefits on behavioral and emotional problems in young children with autism.
This is interesting because I've heard that serotonin can be made in the gut by certain bacteria, but also serotonin is made in the brain. And I don't know if the mechanism is known. So I wonder if serotonin is made more in the gut, then through the signaling, maybe the gut tells the brain, all right, make more serotonin as well, because there's an abundance here. I don't know if the serotonin travels, you know, across the blood-brain barrier. I don't think that that's what happens. I know there's speculation, but anyway, what are your thoughts on what I said?
Well, you're right. Serotonin doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. Serotonin's precursor is tryptophan, and tryptophan is an amino acid that we can receive in our diet, and microbes in our gut can also impact that tryptophan metabolism and produce different metabolites. But the tryptophan in the gut can be used to produce serotonin in the gut. And most of the serotonin in the body is produced in the gut. The serotonin also can be released from the gut into the blood. And that's actually where it was first found, which is really interesting. Serotonin was found in the blood as like a vasoconstrictive molecule. So that means that it was found that serotonin affects the vasculature and blood pressure. But that's in conjunction with many other compounds, as we know. So serotonin is more popularly known in the brain to be associated with mood, with happiness, right? And the serotonin that's made in the brain is made from that tryptophan. So you have to digest that tryptophan. It has to be absorbed into your bloodstream and travel to your brain. The tryptophan can cross the blood-brain barrier, and then the brain can use that tryptophan to make serotonin.
Maybe the brain is saying, we don't have enough serotonin. Don't convert as much tryptophan. Got hold off some and leave it as tryptophan for us in the brain, because we need it. Has anyone done experimentation where they looked at levels of serotonin in the brain versus the gut for autistic people versus non-Parkinson's versus non?
There are some interesting differences in serotonin in the brains of people with autism from some post-mortem studies, I believe. In living studies, it's actually very interesting to find that 1/3 of autistic people have elevated levels of serotonin in the blood. And it's not clear exactly how that correlates to the brain, because it's really hard to measure in the brain when people are alive, of course. But there are differences also in serotonin transporter genes sometimes in autism. So there's some genetic association with a serotonin metabolism difference in autism.
What's the understood difference in metabolism? What's happening?
I don't think it's quite clear, but there's something that's causing the higher level of serotonin in the blood of autistic individuals.
What about corresponding tryptophan levels? And are there any other coenzymes, cofactors that are involved with the tryptophan turning into serotonin? Like, is that molecular pathway understood? Are there intermediaries that could be looked at and their levels as well?
There are other factors in producing serotonin in the brain, like vitamin B6, for example.
Okay, but is the chemistry, the tryptophan chemistry where it turns into serotonin, can that only be accomplished through microbial action? Or like, how in the body is that accomplished? Is that understood?
Yes, it's definitely not. It's more understood as without microbes. That's pretty much how it's been studied. Tryptophan metabolism to serotonin has been more studied without microbes. The interest in the microbiome has come probably more recently. And I think what's really fascinating is that if you look at germ-free animals versus animals that don't have those germs or this bacteria, they have different levels of serotonin in their brains. And they also have altered behavior, like anxiety-like or depression-like behavior, depending on whether it's rats or mice. But these kinds of signals are suggesting to us that our gut microbiome is important for the serotonin in the brain, and our gut microbiome is also important for our behaviors.
Okay, what is the role of this bacteria, 128? Is it part of the tryptophan conversion to serotonin? Does it provide, what does it eat and what metabolites does it produce that are beneficial to the body? Is that understood?
Well, Lactobacillus plantarum PS128 is part of the lactic acid bacteria group of bacteria. So it does produce lactic acid like those other types of bacteria. But one of the unique things about PS128 from its genome is that it has these lipoteichoic acid transporters in its genes that suggest that component, the lipoteichoic acid, the cell surface, could be having an influence. And so there are other ways that serotonin in the brain can be affected besides just the nutrient pathway, like I discussed. There are indications in the literature that immunological effects can also affect serotonin in the brain. And immune mechanisms are more popularly researched with bacteria for obvious reasons. And with probiotics specifically, they're able to signal more beneficial immune responses. So for example, PS128 has been shown in some preclinical studies to modulate immune activities, and such as like increasing an anti-inflammatory cytokine or decreasing inflammatory like cytokine. And by having less inflammation, that could also promote health as well, which is beneficial.
So what happens when someone starts taking the probiotic with the 128? What do they experience over what time period?
What we've seen in the literature for autism, what BNED researchers have found, is that in 1 month, children have shown benefit in attention and reduction in opposition and defiance and improvement in overall behavior problems. They've also seen better mood and reduced sleep problems, reduced self-damaging, and even attention behaviors related to ADHD. On the other hand, there have been some longer studies. You're talking about over time. There was a recent study published in November that was the third of the randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials in autism, where PS128 showed that in the first 2 months in preschool-age children, reduction in anxiety-like behaviors, and then in the subsequent 2 months, the placebo group received the PS128, and they also showed an improvement. So both 1 month, like I told you, and 2 months have shown benefits. And then there was a 6 month study that was a real world study that also showed benefits in children, and that was done in Italy. And then the other double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial was actually 7 months long. Actually, the first 4 months was placebo versus probiotic. And then in the additional 3 months, they took oxytocin on top of that, which is sometimes taken. And with oxytocin and the probiotic, PS128, there was a much better improvement overall than just with the placebo.
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now, back to the show.
Again, does anyone understand, like, how was this first thought that it would help? You know, you said it came from, a fermented food that's consumed in Taiwan. Like, how would, who made this first connection that 128 could help?
Yeah, so Professor Tsai, who is in Taiwan, is the original founder of BNED and also identified this probiotic. And like you said, the mechanisms of action are still remaining to be investigated. You know, we have many compounds and even drugs out there that we don't really fully understand the mechanism. And so there's still more research to be done. So we see this mechanism that by taking PS128 orally, the preclinical model had elevated serotonin and dopamine in the brain. And that's really exciting. But there's so much that happens from the gut to the brain that there's multiple mechanisms that could be at play, like the immune mechanism, like through the blood. There are many studies. We've also seen cortisol reduction. So it could be also multiple mechanisms, because bacteria are live organisms and there are so many ways that they could interact with the intestinal cells and even with the vagal afferent nerve endings. So there is more research to be done there, and we're excited to actually start some new research this year.
What did you guys have to do? And if it's proprietary, no problem, just say so. But what did you guys have to do to make sure that 128 survives to get to the gut? Does it have a spore form? Does it have to be encapsulated so it can survive the stomach acid? Like, you know, how do you know that it's surviving and transiting properly?
Right. So the probiotic PS128 has been studied for some stomach acid and bile acid resistance. So basically what you do is an in vitro test with bile acid and stomach acid like stimulations. And then you see how much of the PS128 survives. And the other interesting thing to mention here is that while probiotics are live microbes that, when administered at adequate amounts, provide a health benefit to the host, postbiotics are inactivated preparations from inactivated microbes that can provide a health benefit to the host with or without their metabolites. So I think it remains to be studied whether the heat-treated form of PS128 could also be beneficial. It hasn't been studied in a clinical population yet. However, there are other postbiotics that show benefits. And so it could be possible that PS128 could also be beneficial in its inactivated form. It just hasn't been tested clinically yet.
Okay. So in autism, it seems like a clear signal it's really helping the kids. What about Parkinson's? What's noticed, I know, over what time period?
Yeah, so that's just a pilot study so far. It was an open label, single arm study. So that means there was no placebo control. And it was the same dose, 60 billion CFU of PS128 per day over 12 weeks. And this population was 52 to 72 year olds. So actually, they did report less off time and more on time, which means that their motor scores were improved significantly. And they also found reduced blood marker levels that are associated with suggesting antioxidant activity and even quality of life improvement. So that's promising. But like I said, it's not placebo-controlled. So there are some placebo-controlled studies, actual randomized double-blind placebo-controlled studies in Parkinson's disease for the future.
But does it, so it was just a test, but do tests show promising results? Or is it, you know, it's too early to tell?
Oh, yes. Like I said, they showed significant improvements in their motor symptom and in their quality of life. So quality of life and motor symptom improvements were promising results for Parkinson's disease with PS128.
So improvement in motor function, what, less tremors or, you know, better ability to control their limbs or other parts of their body? Like, what does that mean for them specifically? Like, if you observe them clinically, what would you see?
Yes. Well, they complete a specific questionnaire that is used in the Parkinson's disease rating scale. And so by rating that questionnaire, which includes tremors, like you said, they reported that they had better control over their motor symptoms, which would include, like you said, less tremors, better ability to control their motor function.
Interesting. Okay. Is there, are there other microbes that amplify 128's effects, ones that are coincident with them that help it work better?
So far, there aren't clinical studies of PS128 side by side with other probiotics. However, the probiotic PS128 is in combination with a postbiotic, HTPS23, for mood, and that is planned for further studies because they both seem to have some similar activities. And so the theory is that together they can have an amplified benefit for mood and stress.
Okay. Very interesting. Have you guys tried to isolate the phages that are associated with 128 and either add more of them or I guess, the only thing you could try is to maybe add more of them along with the probiotic and see what happens. I don't know if there's any beneficial phages or, you know, predatory ones would kill it, but perhaps beneficial ones would increase its efficacy.
That's a very interesting question. Phages are getting more popular in the research, bacteriophages. So basically viruses that live than bacteria. And that particular aspect has not been studied for PS128 in particular, but the interesting research on the virome and phages in bacteria and isolating phages is a really interesting avenue of research.
Yeah, I was thinking as part of the lab work, are you guys using, you know, stomach organoids? You said you were approximating the acids and the chemistry that you know, the microbe would see when it reaches, let's say, the stomach. But, you know, it made me think, again, is there a stomach and maybe an associated colon organoid that you could pass these microbes through and maybe you get, even stronger data or better approximating data?
That's a cool experimental setup. When I was in graduate school, I did work with intestinal organoids derived from mouse colons. And I worked alongside a research assistant who was working on actually human organoids from like human colon components. But for PS128, those kinds of studies haven't actually been done. It is pretty tricky, first of all, just to even create those organoids and take time to build them or really allow them to grow. And then when you're dealing with living intestinal cells in that extracellular matrix that's holding it up as an organoid, and then you have to apply live bacteria, it is pretty tricky because how do you deal with that contamination problem? Because typically when we're growing cells in a lab, especially like human cells, if you get bacterial contamination or something like mold, you don't want that. And you basically have to throw your cells out. So that is a challenging experimental setup. It hasn't been done with PS128, but other kinds of studies you can do with looking at the effect on the intestinal epithelial layer and whether it affects the integrity of that layer and permeability. Those are not necessarily organoid models, but those are much more like well-established and commonly used. I think what's interesting in what we do know about PS128 is more from the clinical side and the benefit that it is actually providing to people.
Okay. Well, I guess there's a long way to go. Are there other conditions that Bennett is looking at as well, in addition to autism and Parkinson's?
Yes. The research pipeline has other conditions. There is a preclinical study published with PS128 in Alzheimer's disease. But as far as other clinical studies, PS128 has been studied in 8 neurological condition studies and then other studies in non-neurological condition populations. So PS128 has been studied in 3 placebo-controlled randomized double-blind studies for autism, 1 real-world study in autism, 1 study in Tourette syndrome that was double-blind randomized placebo-controlled. I told you about the single-arm study in Parkinson's disease. There was also a series of 8 case reports in major depression disorder that was promising, and 2 case reports in major depression disorder that was also promising. There was a study in anxiety done by a different group that was done in China. It was a controlled trial of 200 people, and they studied PS128 with the SSRI versus just the SSRI alone, and they saw benefits in anxiety. Finally, insomnia was also studied. All of these trials were at 60 billion CFU PS128. The insomnia study also showed benefits for reducing deep sleep night awakenings. So the insomniacs saw benefits in their sleep taking 60 billion CFU of PS128 per day.
Well, what about the timing and the frequency of taking it? Most probiotics, from what I understand, you know, people just take it once a day, you know, right before a meal, let's say. Is there a specific protocol that works better, like in the mornings and the evenings? Maybe for autism versus Parkinson's, it's different. Maybe multiple times a day in smaller dosages, one with each meal is better. You know, is anyone looking at that, how it should be administered most effectively?
Sure. The timing of probiotics is a great question. I think most probiotic off the shelf, like you said, they may recommend with a meal because then the meal lowers the stomach acid, and that also can improve the chance of probiotic viability. As for the clinical studies on PS128, some of the studies did have specific timing, but there hasn't been a study that just looked at timing, right? So we would have to design a study that specifically had one group taking PS120 at one timing and the other group with PS128 at another timing, and figure out which timing of PS128 had a better effect. That particular question hasn't been asked. So for most of the studies, the people were given the choice to take it when they wanted. I think part of that flexibility was because the 4 autism trials were done in children. So the parents would have to deal with children, and giving children a medication or even sometimes feeding children can be challenging. So I think the flexibility of providing PS128 at any time of day for children was more of convenience for the parents on that perspective. But in the Parkinson's disease single arm trial, they did specify that it was in the evening.
Okay, so they took it what, before bed? Is that what it means, evening?
Just said at night. So it's not clear whether they did take it with a meal, but I think that is typically easiest and that is typically what's recommended. It wasn't required to be with a meal.
What about prebiotics, you know, inulin, beta-glucans, you know, food for the microbes? Is that needed? Has that been tried? Is it more efficacious?
Inulin and beta-glucan are prebiotics, like you said. They haven't been particularly studied with PS128. In particular, I'm aware of some of their immune benefits and have been familiar with them from other projects, but not for this one in particular. PS128 is by itself efficacious. And of course, that would be an interesting question to see if there's interactions with different types of food, such as prebiotics, if the prebiotics actually help increase the efficacy. That would be very interesting. People, we'd have to also probably control for so many different variabilities in a person's diet because the actual fiber that somebody's consuming could vary from day to day. So I think that would need to be a very tightly controlled study to look at a fiber intake in addition to taking the inulin or beta-glucan or whatever other prebiotic you'd be interested in studying.
Okay. Well, I was going to tell you, it's funny, I'm from New York, so PS128 would probably be the name of a high school, you know, public school 128. That's how they used to call them in New York City. Anyway, okay. So I guess, you know, there's still many, many more variables that can be tested, many things that can be done. you know, to modulate the efficacy. Have you guys done metagenomics on 128 to see what it's capable of doing? What, again, kind of metabolites and things that it could do or could produce?
Yeah, I think we need to do some more research in that area. We are really excited about an upcoming clinical trial that Jack Gilbert is helping design. So Jack Gilbert is a microbiome expert at the University of California, San Diego, and he actually has a son who's autistic, and we're so excited to start working with him this year. He's going to be putting together a team of researchers to design a future clinical trial. And we'd love to do metagenomics and many other questions like the serum metabolites. We want to look at the serum amino acids. We have so many things we want to do. We'll probably have to narrow it down at some point. But we want to do a study in autistic adults because, like I said, most of the benefits have been seen in autistic children. And we want to see what is, first of all, important to autistic adults. Like, is it anxiety reduction? Is it gut health problems? So for example, gut health problems in autism typically could be 3 to 4 times higher than in people who don't have autism. So first we want to know, what do autistic adults find to be the most important problem for them to solve? And then we're also going to work with Jack Gilbert to design this study to help them. And it would be great to add the metagenomics, like you said.
Yeah, all it takes is millions of more dollars and tons more studies to figure it out. You know, no big deal.
Yes.
I know you guys can't do everything, but yeah, you've done a lot. That's very cool. Well, excellent. What's the best way for people to find out more about Bened's work and your work in particular? Where can they go?
Thank you. So Bened's website is benedlife.com, BenedLife.com. There's an Instagram, there's Facebook, so you can follow and observe what's going on. We have a blog. There's also ps128.info, which has summaries of the scientific studies. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast, Richard.
Yeah, thanks, Noah. I appreciate you coming.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at findinggeniuspodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.